In tech we trust. It's the people in charge we're not sure about.
Hey, and welcome to episode 34 already of the In Tech We Trust podcast. Wow, 34 episodes. It's growing on us, guys.
Oh, man, like mold.
Like mold. But hey, guys, it's the three of us today. It's me, Mark Farley, and Rickatron. Hello, my friends.
Hey, skeleton crew, we're going to pull it off.
Oh, yeah, boy. Gabriel actually called out on the last minute. But Rickatron, you were not supposed to be here on the call, so thank you for joining. Where are you now, Rick?
Well, I'm in Chicago, and I just finished up my duties at Microsoft Ignite, the first event of that type, which we'll talk about next week. I will be fully prepared for that, but I'm on my way to Las Vegas because I'm going to be scouting out some secret stuff that I'm working on for a secret event at my employer who is not secret.
Hey, so we got to get a little sneak preview on Ignite, you know, what it's like to have just all of these, all the Microsoft shows sort of combined into one, you know, what's your kind of impressions on that? Just a sneak preview, then we'll go into more depth next week.
It's homework. You know, because myself, I'm interested in a lot of things. I'm interested in Windows Server. I'm interested in Azure. I'm interested in Surfaces. And I'm also interested in Office apps. And I literally have to chew on this after all of this that I've taken in.
Yeah, how long was it? Was it a full week? 4 days? 3 days? What was it, Rick?
Actually, I believe certain people were starting up on like labs and stuff on Saturday, and it goes through tomorrow, Thursday. So it's a full week event here in Chicago. It was finally very refreshing to have a major event outside of San Francisco in Las Vegas. I had a great time, great food, decent weather, but it's a big time event. 24,000 attendees now, minus one as I'm rolling out a day early.
So we're not going to put you on the hot seat this week for Ignite, which we were actually already planning to do next week. And we actually have a pretty heavy agenda for this week. Mark, what are you doing?
I'm drinking a Bear Republic Grand Am beer right now. You know, thinking about brewing my next batch of beer, trying to understand if I can brew a whole thing with using just dried malt extract instead of going whole grain. I'm kind of flip-flopping on that. I mean, my partner Tony and I, we've been doing all grain brews, and now I'm thinking, what if I just did something that was all dried malt extract? How would that turn out, trying to figure out the hops, the brewing process, and all that? So I don't know if I'll have anything new. I did cook up a new batch this weekend with my son, got him involved in brewing, much to my wife's dismay. She thinks it's a terrible hobby. I think it's a great hobby. So there you go.
You know what, Mark? Every single week you're coming with these new stories, and I know you're keeping one bottle aside from every batch you make for me for the next time I visit you, right?
I wish I was, but no, they get consumed. I was reminded last weekend I had a two-day beer weekend. One day was brewing with my son. The other day we were just we're taking from primary to secondary fermentation. My buddy Tony broke out the last remaining bottles of a brew that I did back in December, and so we drank them. And so, unfortunately, Hans, I'm not. But I'll have to start labeling some. I'll have to have a new closet for you.
As of now, you're making a batch of stickers that say Hans 01, Hans 02, Hans 03.
I'm going to have to do that, but you know, the hop quality, the aroma decreases over time.
Right? Oh, I get that.
You can't keep it.
Yeah. Well, we'll make that happen somewhere in this summer, probably. Maybe running up to VMworld.
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah.
That would be awesome. So, Rickatron being at Microsoft Ignite, Microsoft actually already had another convention last week, Microsoft Build. This week we have, next to Microsoft Ignite, we have EMC World. Next week we'll have IBM Edge in the US. I mean, it's the season of conventions coming up. Any other conventions that I missed, Ricketron? You know a lot of them.
Well, I'm prepping starting early part of next month. I've got Cisco Live in San Diego. It's going to be a big one.
That's second week of June, right?
Yeah, 7th through the 11th. And there's so much going on. I have a little something in New York. The events season is absolutely underway. And you look around the world, it's very much between the meat of the summer, right? So late spring through early fall. Kind of the last big one I can think of is VMworld Europe. And it's going to be a marathon. This year it's going to be bad for me. I try to splice, you know, and pick the most impactful events, and for what I do, it's actually not at all a problem if I show up a day late or leave a day early like I'm doing, because it's counting marbles on being home, and after a while all the events start looking and feeling the same, so I have to really just use my time efficiently.
Well, it depends on the type of event, right? There's just some events where, like,
no.
Well, not for you, but for me, I definitely. There's events where you just go in, do your thing, go out, and nothing happened. And there's other events where you'll find like 100 to 200 people that you know, and it's 3, 4, or 5 days, like complete full time people, other people.
Yeah, well, I mean, Hans, you got to understand, you are the most people person that's out there. I remember, when we shared our role. The Ricketron was knocked down. It could not keep up with you.
Oh, my gosh.
Hans is the only guy that has, like, facilitated an extraction of a drunk man from a river at 3 in the morning in Russia. That is a fact.
I wish there was video of that, but it was too dark, I'm sure. Not enough light to film.
You know what? There's nothing secret here about that. It's actually a great story. So we were with the product strategy team from Veeam in St. Petersburg, and we were together like meetings and then dinner and some drinks all week long. Like, and we were in each other's face like 16 hours a day. And I think it was the last night we went out with the whole team, and we were ready to go back to the hotel. And I was like, you know what, guys, go on. I'll find my way home. I need like this 1 hour me time that I don't have anyone of the whole team in my face. It's been good. Let me enjoy this city. It was, I think, 3 a.m., knee-high snow, as drunk as drunk could be. The bar was actually a cocktail bar, and they keep shoving me some different types of shots.
And you just had to be the guinea pig for them.
Yes, absolutely. So I closed the bar and then started walking in the direction of the hotel,
and wind, I hope, up into the wind, into the to the hotel, right?
Well, knee-high snow was enough, right? And it's freezing, like minus 20 degrees Celsius. I have no idea what that is in Fahrenheit. So my phone actually couldn't work anymore. It was too cold, so I had to warm my phone in my hands. Then I could boot it up for like 1 minute to use Google Maps. And at 15 minutes in, I walk over this bridge, and there's this canal going through St. Petersburg, a couple of them, going through St. Petersburg, and half of the canal was frozen, and the second half, the side of the canal, was already melting. And there was a man, I think 60 years old, rolling over the ice. I've never seen anyone as drunk as that could be, and he was rolling in towards the water. So it was like, I cannot have this happening. So I jumped in the middle of the street at 3 a.m. By accident or by magic, a fire truck appears in front of me. They pull over, they drop a ladder on the ice, pick the guy up on the sidewalk, and guess what happens at that point? You mean you should expect like ambulances and police and so coming in to see what happens and bringing the guy to a hospital?
I want to guess. They bring out the vodka.
No. Well, it was really close. They just shook the guy's hand and he walked away.
No. Oh. That's what I call TIR. This is Russia.
Without vodka.
Whenever you can't explain it. Yeah.
But I was sober immediately. As soon as I saw that guy, he was really rolling to death in the ice water. And I literally think that I saved a man's life that night.
You probably did.
Absolutely. And you had an amazing Instagram from it too.
So what Oh Jesus. This is half of the podcast war stories. So I from the bar to the hotel, I took pictures of the buildings that I saw, put them on Instagram in those 20 seconds that I had as breadcrumbs to know which route I took the day after.
So 20 degrees below centigrade is about zero Fahrenheit. So it's cold. Yeah, it's cold.
Yeah, that's cold. That's freezing. So my phone didn't work anymore. Hey, guys, let's move on to the tech news of the week, because we do have a lot of news coming up. As we do it in the last couple of weeks, let's go through the list of all the news and then pick a couple of things from it. First of all, OpenStack Kilo being released. So the new version, version 11. Biggest news of the week will all be coming from EMC World. The biggest announcements that I have on my list are VXBlock, which comes in two flavors. I will discuss that a little bit. Non-destructive upgrades for Extreme IO version 4.0. My apologies for the laughter.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. New and improved. They should just say that.
Well, there were a couple of other things, but that's the only thing I remembered. Non-destructive upgrades, which was the most requested feature. Next up, there's Viper, which is the software-defined layer that EMC launched a couple of months or a year back and then split it up already a couple of times. I don't even know what all happened with it. But apparently, they're going to open source it completely to GitHub. And that would be, and that's the biggest news that comes with that, a new strategy, or the open sourcing part. Two free products. There's going to be a virtual VNX that is free, and Scale.io is also going to be free. That's probably something interesting. And lastly, there's finally a DSSD tech preview, so the acquisition that they did. There's a lot of news coming from EMC World, and it's still going, so there might be other things that we haven't noticed, but on day three, I never expect like really big news coming. Other news, except for EMC, Microsoft, we had Ignite that Rick will cover next week. One of the things that I do want to pick up on is that Microsoft removes Patch Tuesday. Yay! A little one that goes in the same line of Microsoft Ignite is that Mesosphere Data Center Operating Systems, DCOS, comes out of beta and runs on Azure. Today, Atlassian announced a hyper-converged platform, and HP, we discussed that a couple of weeks ago, that HP was going to release some white boxes, and they are now officially, we have some nitty-gritty details on that, or at least they have given that. So a lot of tech news this week, guys. I'm not sure if we have anything on OpenStack ourselves, because, Mark, you're not really following it closely, I think.
Not that close. A little bit. It's interesting to see the release. When I was looking at the news for it, I guess one of the things that stood out to me is the fact that they talk about the software-defined economy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's interesting. I didn't know that we had a software-defined economy. I thought it was still sort of, based on the way that banks do things, which is... not necessarily very software-defined.
Well, they're not focusing on the economy part as such, but the way technology is used in that era, right? And yes. What they mean with that is that a lot of the new things, or the iterations, actually, because I haven't seen that much new things in the Kilo release. It's more iterations of Nova, of Neutron. They're more APIs are going to be a big priority there, and that's mainly where the focus was towards that SDS world, or that software defined world, is that it's all going to be API and more API. What I did find interesting about the OpenStack Kilo announcement is that you slowly see that maturity model coming in. Like there's so many engineers now working on it. There's so many companies working on it that they are more focusing on the stability of the product, and you see it in the press releases. They're using rigorous testing, which it's more. I think I want to use the word industrialized innovation,
mature,
right?
Mature, more mature.
Well,
yeah,
less. Yeah. I think less as a testing lab kind of. Release, but more as a product release number. Does that make sense to you guys?
Like ready for production? Like it's a real product that goes through QA, that type of thing?
Yeah, I think more and more they want every new release to be a well-checked, well-tested, as maybe previous releases were more to get it out and have people go with it.
Yeah, I mean that's interesting, right? They've got the thing that you and I probably both said, 1,500 developers, 169 different organizations, and that's an interest. Those are big numbers, right? If 169 organizations are involved, and each one of them are, on average putting 9 people towards it. Some companies are putting a lot more than that. So if everybody involved is doing testing, you would get this great compatibility. Right, of saying, oh, well, this works for us, if that's what's going on. But if 170 companies are all trying to like figure out their own special way of doing things, then that's not. However, I get the feeling that it really is being driven towards compatibility.
One of the last things that I saw in those lines was there are over 100 drivers now. So yeah. that really needs that rigorous testing. I think we're going to see more and more a shift here towards a market mature product, which it's actually still not a product, right? It's a platform, a program, but not a product as such.
Yeah. So, do you think OpenStack is going to become a platform for software defined everything? As where is its trajectory taking it? It sounds like this release, the Kilo. Kylo, however you pronounce it, is incremental, but it must have a direction.
Kylo.
Well, K-I-L-O, right?
Kylo. Yeah, Kylo? I'm with Kilo. I'm going to go metric on it there.
Yeah, thank you.
Which is funny because, Kilo is what, 1,000? But
yes.
It's only version 11, right? Okay. Maybe you multiply 11 versions times 100 QA tests, and you're getting close to it, maybe.
So you say Kylo, I say Kilo. Or I say Kylo, you say Kilo, whatever.
Yeah. Are we going to make a potato song from this?
I guess.
Here's one thing that I saw that kind of makes me think about it a little bit. Platform, it's growing, compelling for enterprise application and enterprise leadership. Open source alternative. That's what I think we would call it. It's an open source alternative to the software-defined data center, because this is exactly what it is. No, I mean, this is the open source. It's the OSSDDC, the Open Source Software Defined Data Center. It's got 6-letter acronyms. It's incredibly mature. Go kick the tires on it.
Okay, let's move on to the whole stack of EMC World news. First of all, the VX block, which is the new per rack type of solution that comes out of EMC. And there's going to be 2 flavors in VXBlock. First of all, the first flavor that comes out is going to be either vSphere, KVM, or bare metal. It doesn't really matter that much, but it's going to be based on Scale.io. And later this year, there's going to be a VXBlock vSphere plus vSAN, which is going to be one of the first Evo racks that we have been waiting for. Apparently, there would still be Cisco Nexus switching in there, but it underneath it would be Quanta Compute.
If you're punch drunk in love with VMware NSX, this actually sounds like a good idea. But I've run into very few people that are really committed to NSX. It's kind of a next logical step there. I mean, there's still Cisco involved, which there's a huge competitive situation on the networking side between those two.
But
it's kind of interesting to see that, yeah, it is. It is crazy. But, if you're going down the NSX route, this is definitely something to look into.
Yeah. About that competitiveness on a networking side, have you seen the videos with Fred Nix?
No.
They are great. So look them up. They are awesome. So Fred Nix interviews Chad Sackage and some guy from Brocade. And it's all about the EMC plus Brocade partnership. And there's some punches towards the other partner. But it's great. It's awesome, great videos. I mean, you have to see them. They're quite a laugh. You will love them, Mark. I'll put the link in the show notes because they're.
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah.
Yeah, let's check them out.
Hey, this one's quite interesting. Apparently, they're going to open source Viper. So I had my second thoughts on Viper from the beginning, because it really to become a really good platform product out there, they needed external partners to join in, which was, if you make it a proprietary software, very hard because it's CMC and you need the external storage partners to come in. We've seen a couple of shifts in the product. They've already split a couple of things out into different product names, and now it's going to be completely open sourced. And I think this is what they should have done from the get-go.
Yeah, I agree with you. It makes a lot of sense, right? The problem with any of these types of products, when you're dealing, you know, with in an environment that attempts to mix other vendors' products with your own, is the support issue there. And there's a lot of finger pointing, and it slows down sales, it slows down adoption, and it just makes sense to do it this way, right? If you're trying to interoperate, you might as well let these other people write code for it. Might as well let everybody write code for it. It's necessary.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, who is really interested in joining that program? If it's an EMC closed program, no one, right?
And so, no one.
Yeah, to have that. That control layer that they wanted to build with Viper being agnostic, it had to have other people involved in a more open way. And having Viper becoming totally open source is, in my opinion, actually the only route left.
Yeah, it still doesn't guarantee anything, right? Because
you know,
Hitachi, Network Appliance, HP, everybody else can say, so it's open source, it doesn't mean we're going to develop for it. Right. It can create issues, though, at large customers that can talk to these people and say, we'd really like you to work with this. Right. And so the way that this will work for EMC is if customers come to the vendors that EMC wants to cooperate with or would like to cooperate with. And it'll be interesting to see how that works out, because you can't make somebody work with open source software just because you turn it out there. And you might be able to have some discussions, say, well, we made it open source, you know, they don't want to participate in it, but I think everybody will understand, yeah, it's still EMC's game.
I think you're bringing up a pretty good point there. If they have a big customer, let's say an Hitachi customer, and they're bringing an EMC, and the customer chooses, you know what, let's standardize on this Viper control layer, then it will be an obligation for Hitachi to follow along.
It's not an obligation. Those get into some very difficult discussions.
Right? Well, not an obligation.
Yes. It's an opportunity for individual innovation. And you could end up locking yourself into something, but there might be something really cool that bubbles out of this type of effort. I mean, open source stuff generally does well, and this is one example where the big brands are embracing it and trying to latch onto it in some way.
This is now Viper being open sourced, right? But look at the bigger picture here, which is something they actually are giving with it. Like, this is just a first step of open sourcing one of our storage software products. Apparently, more of those steps would be already in the build, and a lot of that would be driven by Randy Bias, helping to get them to understand, because I think EMC is not the first company that would love to get all their stuff being open sourced, and having a guy like Randy Bias driving that or pushing that can definitely help. If you look at it in the same light that what we said last week or 2 weeks ago with VMware, with the Photon and releases also open sourcing, I think the EMC Federation is slowly understanding or moving towards a more open world.
Yeah, well, Pivotal's clearly there. you know, Pivotal's done a lot with open source. They open sourced a lot of their work.
Yep.
And, yeah, and they're going to continue to do that. I mean, it's interesting to think about Randy Bias's role at EMC, right? I mean, is it something that happened after he went there, or did EMC decide that they needed somebody like Randy so they could figure out how to do this? And my guess is they wanted to bring in somebody like Randy to help them figure out how to do this.
I totally agree there.
Yeah, lots of smart people at EMC. They've probably been looking at this for some time. They probably understood the issue with Viper. They probably had customers come back and say, look, you know, why don't you open source this, right? I mean, a lot of good ideas that companies get, do come from customers or are at least amplified by them, right? So this is very interesting watching EMC do this. You know, I think historically you think of them as one of the more proprietary companies out there. If they can figure out how to get a nickel out of you, they will, mm-hmm. you know, and it has to do with pricing of software that sells with the arrays that they've been selling and all this stuff, right? They charge for everything. Well, okay, open source, that's a whole different thing for them. And it could be the beginning of a different type of business model.
Yep.
It'll be very interesting to watch.
You bring up Pivotal, but Pivotal was exactly meant to be like the lab rats that would not be VMware or EMC, and they could do whatever they want to bring us to an innovative new world and figure out new stuff. This is bringing open source into EMC itself.
Right. Yeah, that's a big change. I see Pivotal as the analytics. I think this was, you know, they really wanted to go after this big emerging analytics business, and it turned out that, you know, for whatever reasons, they decided that if they were going to play there, and with the assets that they had, they wanted to open source them. You know, very interesting. But bringing an open source business model, you know, for a product inside, you know, the old mothership EMC, that really is different. It'll be very interesting to watch to see if there's other things that do it. I mean, they've made comments like, yeah, we're not going to open source the code, you know, for our big arrays. Okay, got it. You know, nobody's going to do that. But
why do they keep calling it the Federation? It sounds very like Star Wars, you know, like the Rebellion or the whoever the other guys are. I don't know.
Well, that's what they choose to go for, and it kind of makes sense, actually.
I think part of that is description to deal with the investor world, you know, and I can't remember the guy's name, of course, right off the top of my head. You know, the guy that wants to break up every company, And they're looking at all of the assets, all of the technology assets that EMC, VMware, and Pivotal have. And it's like, which ones do you need and which ones should we sell off for a profit, right? And Joe Tucci, who has built this whole thing, you know, wants to keep all of this stuff. And I think he understands the importance of investing that over the long haul, you know, you've got some hits and you've got some misses. You don't want to just jettison pieces of technology because they may not be profitable today. Right. If you do that, you know, if you're a large company and you jettison something, you know, that then 3 years from now you regret, that's not a good move, even though it might be short term successful for stockholders. Right. So, you know, so Tucci's really, you know, he put together this idea. He and his staff put this idea of a federation together. And it does allow them to go after these different businesses. And maybe it started, you know, when they acquired VMware and they operated it as a wholly owned subsidiary. And that became a hugely successful venture for them. You know, instead of bringing VMware into EMC, they left it separate. It could operate with the rest of the industry in a very open way. It was terrific. They're doing the same thing with Pivotal. Pivotal is even more open than VMware. And so by having these different core businesses, it allows these entities to continue. And so getting back to the earlier question, you know, why federation? I think that marketing-wise, corporate marketing-wise and everything else, that EMC wants to continue to reinforce the fact that they have these separate entities. Yes, they work together, but they are separate in the market and that there's value in that. And that it's important. They're doing it to ward off, investors that may want to sell off pieces.
I don't even want to imagine a world where they integrated VMware in the beginning in EMC.
Yeah, Tucci was brilliant in doing that.
May the fourth be with them, so we'll be good.
next up, Virtual VNX and Scale.io will be freely available, unlimited.
Wow.
Yet another VSA.
Yes, I agree for VNX. Scale.io could be, and I'm not saying it has to be, but bringing Scale.io out for free, that could be a challenge for a couple of the smaller server SAN type players in the market. I'm not sure. I think that is the intent of EMC here, is to push away a couple of those smaller players.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, why do you offer something that you've invested in? This is really a head scratcher for me.
Well, you might be right, Hans. Maybe they're trying to thin the herd, but it also might be one of those things that, you know, I look at these convergence technologies, and I am incredibly skeptic. And with anything, the only way I'm ever going to be a fan of it is if I give it a try. So it might be one of those techniques where this is a seeding technique where IT pros might latch onto it, make a business case, and say, look, we can do all these things, save all these money, and I've been already doing it for free. We can get these business benefits, but I need you to invest this way to take it to the next level. That might be where they're going with it because, you know, those types of changes are hard to just give a try with, and maybe they're just trying to enable that and in the process discredit some of the other, you know, smaller players, which one of which has already released the community one from Nutanix, for example. Mm-hmm. And I know for a fact you're going to see more of these happen. So it's got to be a seeding and an education technique, maybe based on, why they don't sell it. Maybe it's because people don't know enough about it, haven't tried it, can't take their word from the sales team. They have to try it on their own. That might be part of it.
Yeah, so I can't really remember where I read it, but what you just said is actually intentional to get more of their software, both the virtual VNX and the Scale.io, and probably a couple of other things, that it's going to be a strategy to get their software more in the hands of the engineers. Next to that, I didn't really see limitations on it. Like we have the free Veeam. The free Veeam has limitations in it that you can unleash by putting in a license key. I don't see that in these products today.
Oh, the secret sauce, you know, risk, you know, processors where you need it, the way cache is placed, those types of things are going to make the difference in the end.
Well, I'm not sure if it's going to be limited. I don't see anything today in the news that any of the features or time-wise it would be a limited product. The only thing I'm not sure about is it going to have support or not? Right, that's going to be a question, right?
Support has to be an extra cost. They can't support an unlimited use of a product without charging for support. That is just a black hole of money.
Exactly, but still bringing Scale.io for free in the market, I think that's pretty much challenging the smaller players, and that's probably where it's intended to.
Yeah, so I'm trying to remember what their last numbers were, EMC's last numbers and all that sort of thing. My guess is this is in response to competitive pressure. So I think you're right. I think they do want to disrupt the market and try to get that upper hand. Not that they ever lost an upper hand, but try to reestablish it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It looks like a desperate move. I wish Gabe was on the show today to hear his reaction. This is always very interesting. But
so the last part of the EMC World news was the announcement, or at least the tech preview of DSSD, their all flash, as close to DRAM as possible speeds product they acquired not that long ago. Any one of you have seen or known what they're doing with that?
No, I don't really know what's going on there. I'd have to catch up. So you said there was a preview. Did they?
So they had this. Yes, they had a tech preview on stage about the product, DSSD, how it's going to look like when it goes to market. Now, if you think about all flash, this is not going to be your all-flash, all-purpose array. This is really going to be an external box with very high-capacity NAND, which has footprint of extremely high density in IOPS, extremely high density in volume of flash, but and then it's going to be close connected to the server, so it's only going to be for high performance computing and that type of big data stuff. It's not going to be for your software defined data center type of infrastructure.
Yeah, so I'm a little bit confused. Is this memory, or is it random access memory, or is it flash? It sounds like it's flash.
It's flash. It's NAND dies, but very close, packed on each other, very high density.
Okay.
Isn't this that group with all the patents that we were talking about at one point?
Yeah.
Yeah, so here's the thing that matters. Extreme IO, as we know, is an all-flash array, but DSSD is really more at the server level, right? So I think that this is bringing this high performance, high capacity, like ultra high performance, right on server. So I think that that's probably where I think the difference is going to be made, especially if you look at Extreme IO comparatively in the portfolio of the Federation. I think that we look at that server side capability, that's where I think it's going to make a huge difference, because you got to have that sometimes very close, very quick, very high performance, and that might make all the difference for certain workloads.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be in really specific workloads, right? It's not going to be general purpose at all, which is something they were hammering on, that we would not forget that.
Yeah, so I mean, the place where it could be very interesting is in analytics, right? And where you need to have, I mean, the big thing that's going on there is in-memory databases, and whether or not this would allow, you know, performance of large analytics systems that require more storage capacity than you can get in memory in a server.
Yes.
If you can get, you know, close enough to that, then you've got the ability to support, you know, maybe big pivotal customers that are looking at, you know, enormous data sets that you can't actually fit in memory. Well, then what do you do? You know,
exactly.
You've got to have really low latency and huge density, very close to the server. My guess is it's going someplace like that.
Yeah, that's exactly where it's going.
It has to be.
Fast as DRAM, but not.
Yeah, it can't be quite as fast as DRAM. But,
no, well, that's what they meant, right? As close as you can get to DRAM without being it.
I think that's a big area, right? It's certainly an important part, I think, of the Federation's overall business strategy. You know, they've been talking about big data for many years, and you know, you've got to have hardware systems to support it.
Mm-hmm. Hey, enough EMC for this week, guys.
Because we're just guessing.
Yeah. Which we do every week.
Every week. Sometimes we have more information than that, but okay.
Yeah. Microsoft removes Patch Tuesday. Microsoft.
Yay! Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Well, but when will it be? It's not like we're not patching anymore.
So, no, exactly. So the whole point is, and let me quote from the Register article here, Microsoft will release security updates to PCs, tablets, and phones 24/7, as well as pushing other software innovations, quoted, effectively putting an end to the need for a Patch Tuesday once a month, which means that they're going to the Google Chrome model of updating in the background or pushing small updates whenever they're ready.
So at any time, you may be closing up to leave the office or to get on your airplane, Rickatron, and your Surface may say, don't shut me off, I'm updating. It's no longer just on Tuesday.
Well, you know, honestly, this is an opportunity for the businesses that matter to do policy, and chances are they're probably still going to do it on a weekly schedule. But that's nice. I'll be honest with you, I can't think of the last time a Windows update broke anything. So, yeah, I'm good with it.
You know what? Since I've changed and to everything is iOS and OS X now with me, and even before that on my phone already, I update constantly. I think I even have all my mobile devices set to update whenever it comes along. And I've been okay with it. I haven't had a single issue in the last 2-3 years with an update that broke everything.
Well, there you go. And
even in the data center, I've not seen it either. So, I mean, from Microsoft, I've seen it from others. but not from Microsoft.
Yeah, so why lump everything together in one humongous bad time when you can just, you know, spread it out? I think it makes a lot of sense.
One of the things you have with a Patch Tuesday, or however you want to do it, if you lump everything together in a pack, first of all, if you want to test them out, it's taking a while to test everything out rigorously. Secondly, if you don't do it and something goes wrong, you don't have a clue where it happened. If you do 50 updates at the same time and your device doesn't boot anymore or something else went wrong, you have no idea which update it was. If you do constant updates and something happened, you only have to look at the last updates that happened.
Yeah, and I, you know what? I think this fits in with the whole Microsoft strategy being cloud first, mobile first. You know, when they're always updating to the cloud. I mean, the cloud apps that they have that they run, you know, they don't wait for Patch Tuesday to come along to do those, right? And the mobile infrastructure, it just doesn't make sense to do that and hammer people once a month. So I think it's just natural progression. It took them long enough.
What do we want to focus on next? I don't even want to focus on the Atlantis announcement of the hyperconverged platform. Yet another one. You know what? How many of them are we going to announce in the next couple of weeks? I have in my list, I have over 20 now of hyperconverged platforms, of which most of them are just slapping their VSA on top of a Blueprint server, sometimes not even shipping it themselves.
Wasn't there something about USB sticks or something with this?
They're going to ship USB sticks to their partners, who can then deploy it on a, like the vSAN ready node models from VMware, right? You could deploy it on that node that is a pre-configured node. So they put the ESX should be on it, and then you get your stick from Atlantis, and then you can install, the partner should install the software on the boxes. It would be supporting ESX and Zen server of all.
What?
Yeah, well, you know what? It's just to snuggle up on Citrix and have a partner for the lounge.
Whatever. I kind of think of Zen server as, you know, it's been put out to pasture, you know? I don't know.
Well,
maybe open source option, I guess, if you look at it that way.
So if you look if you look where Atlantis comes from, Atlantis has a lot of those VDI Citrix type of people, and their software has been focusing a lot on that historically with Atlantis Ilio, that kind of grew it into Atlantis USX and now this hyperconverged platform. So they have a history there with VDI, and it is still targeted at that market segment, which makes sense for them to partner up with Citrix, but then to release a hyperconverged platform based on Zen server, that's in my... I'm sorry. I don't even... my sentences anymore.
This will be the market-leading hyperconverged solution on Zen server, so here's a first for you.
Because it's the only one!
That's right.
And they didn't include Hyper-V.
No, that's probably coming somewhere later on, Hyper-V and KVM. I think they actually did say that it's going to come later on. But yeah, you know what? Yet another player. Hyper-converged infrastructure rules. Yay!
Hey, you know, Hans, you started this discussion by saying you didn't even know if you wanted to talk about it. Now we've done way too much.
Exactly. I don't have that much on the HP Whitebox servers, but there's a lot of details on it out there now, how they would look like, which processors, which blah, blah, blah. I will put the link in the show notes if you want to read up on it. I do think it's a pretty smart move from HP, this partnership with Foxconn and Intel, which is more to the scale-out, big data, hyper... performance computing, that type of stuff. It's a smart move not having to go there with their ProLiant servers and partnering up with Foxconn here.
Did they explain why they call these the Apollo series?
I'm not sure if I'm not sure if there's an explanation of that. If it is, it's going to be in the article that I'm going to link in the show notes.
Yeah, my guess is it's for whatever copyright reasons or naming reasons back from a long time ago when they bought Apollo, the, you know, the workstation company.
Oh.
You know, it's probably a name they can use without having to go through an extended search, and it's a name that everybody knows how to spell. They don't have to call it, you know whatever.
You know what, Mark? If you are right on that, that would be awesome.
I like the name of your company. Your product sucks, but we're just going to go ahead and buy it and park it and put it in a vault and use it when we need it.
And in 20 years, we're going to look at the list of all the names we have rights on, and we'll use that for a product launch.
Yeah, well, but trust me, they made a lot of money off Apollo. Apollo is a great acquisition for HP, a couple decades ago, right, or something like that. Back in the 90s. I think they bought Apollo. Maybe it was in the late 80s. Unix workstation company, and it really allowed HP in a lot of ways to do to have a big growing Unix business. It was a very important acquisition for HP in the history of of their development of their computing products. And here it comes again. I saw this and it's like Apollo. Really, Apollo? You know, and then it hit me. Yeah, it's probably just because, you know, searching for a name is like the last thing you ever want to do.
Hey, now. All right. You know what, guys? I love doing podcasts with these dinosaurs with me that can lecture me on history. Thank you, Mark.
my neck hurts.
Speaking of people that have been in the industry and doing a job for a very long time, let's move to this week's biz news, where we have merely one item, but it is a big one. Cisco hires new CEO from within, which means...
It means saying goodbye to John.
Yes.
It means saying goodbye to John.
It's not entirely saying goodbye, of course. He's still going to be a chairman for a while. But first of all, 20 years, John Chambers.
What an incredible tenure he's had there. There's nobody in this industry that was ever any better prepared for anything than John Chambers.
What do you mean with that?
John Chambers, whenever you saw him or whenever he spoke, he knew what he was talking about. This guy did his homework and understood everything. And he loved customers. He loved talking to customers. A lot of what he got from directly from customers. So when he came to talk to the industry or financial analysts or whatever, he was ready. He had his rationale, he had his reasons down. He absolutely knew his business. He knew his business. I don't know. I never worked for Cisco, so I don't know how well he understood, the manufacturing and the operations end and that kind of stuff. But he did understand products and what customers use those products for and what they wanted to see in those products next. He was on top of it.
Well, my amazing observation for Chambers, and it really boils down to Cisco's performance, is successful entrance to new markets. And I'll use UCS servers as an example. The server, is a commodity in a sense, but in 2009 they were without a product, and then they came on with UCS, and in that short time in a very competitive space have become number two. I mean, that's incredible, and that's totally different from what they did in network switching, and they've had an incredible success in business phone systems as well. I mean, it's not just networking, and I think that entrance into new markets, not through acquisition, through internal product launch engineering, that's really, really something. And to oversee that on those types of big boy numbers, that's an amazing step.
Well, not just internal development, Rick, though, but he also did these fantastic, wonderfully successful spin-out, spin-in things, right? Which is where UCS came from, and it's where their storage network switches came from. The idea that, we probably can't do this internally. There'll be too much shit. And certainly some of his top engineering managers, leaders had a lot to do with that. Luca Calfor, what Luca's last name? I can't remember. But, these guys, they took these companies, they spun them out and they spun them back in, and they just, you know, they were able to do things much faster than they could have inside Cisco. And you have to give Chambers some amount of credit for the brilliance to see that we're too big and bureaucratic to do this now. We're going to cut these people a lot of slack and do it that way instead.
I totally agree with you there. If you go to a Cisco Live event, there is this whole section with one desk booths that are, this is stuff we invest in externally. And there's crazy stuff in there of which you know one day they're going to acquire this back in. And it's strategically done constantly. I don't know that many... HP's not doing that. Dell's not doing that. I'm not sure EMC's is doing it. Who does this? I think only Cisco does this at that scale.
Yeah, I think so. I'm trying to think of anybody else.
IBM might have some of that.
Yes, IBM has some of that, but not on that scale.
No, I don't think so. I mean, this idea of spin out, spin in is really something that was unique to Cisco.
Yeah, at Cisco Life in Europe, in Milan in January, I think they had at least 20 to 30 companies, like one desk booths where two people were in there for the whole week, and all small new companies that maybe have 3 to 50 people on board maximum. And one day, five of those 25 are going to be acquired again.
What did they call that? The innovation zone or something like that?
Yeah, it's probably something like that. I have a picture of it, but
you know, I should do myself a favor at my next event. You know how I was heeing and hawing about events are all blah blah the same. I should really go down and check those types of places out. In fact, my next major event is Cisco Live, and you know, if we want to tell a good banter story about Cisco, guys, I got a good one for you. So we'll round out the podcast on something funny as you go on, Hans. But we'll bring it back to me here. I got a hilarious story.
Well, you bring up so when you go to a conference, visit these people, and I've been doing this strategically at all the biggest conferences lately, is go to the outside of the solutions exchange. Like when you go to VMworld, you've got these all big booths in the middle, and then go to the outsides. That's where the interesting part begins. That's where there's 100 companies. 90 of them will be out of business in 2 years, but 10 of them in 5 years' time will have these big booths in the middle of the LA, and you have seen them. That I always do. I start at the outside of the solutions hall. And Ricketron, with this, I'll let you close the show with another great story.
So this is a great story. I went to Cisco Live in Milan last year, 2014. And as a partner, a Cisco partner, the way Cisco structures the event, I believe it was Monday, they made it Partner Day. And I forget the name of the facility, but the way Cisco structures the event is that Cisco Live proper is in one large space, but Partner Day – I came for Partner Day, so I go, I get my badge, and I walk around, I'm trying to find the Partner Day room. I've got a room number, but I can't find it in the building. And then lots of really good people in the blue shirt ask me, right? They come up and go, hello, signoretti, half English, half Italian. Welcome to Cisco. Okay, hello. Where is the Partner Day? And the guy said, oh, signoretti, I'm sorry, the party is not today. No. Partner Day. And then he says, okay. So he runs over, he gets his other mate, and the other guy goes, hello, signoretti, welcome to Cisco. Where is the Partner Day? Oh, no. Signoretti, the party is on Wednesday at 8 p.m. No, the party is not today. And I'm like, Partner Day. Well, I'm convinced they thought I'm like an alcoholic. It's 8 a.m. on Monday morning, and I'm looking for the party. They probably thought I was like trying to get it, you know. It was an interesting moment. You had to
you're legendary in Italy.
Turns out Partner Day was in the hotel across the street. So Ricketron was an hour late, but he found it.
Okay, awesomeness.
Welcome to Cisco.
Yeah. Okay. So not everything John Chambers was great, of course. He did buy Flip and close down Flip.
Oh, yes.
Yes. I know I do. That's one thing I'll always remember about John Chambers is like, yep, you bought Flip and shut it down.
Oh, is that going to be his legacy in your eyes?
No, but it's just it'll be that little thing that, that keeps me from idolizing him because I think John Chambers is one of the best technology CEOs we've ever had. And, you know, lots and lots of people inside Cisco have come and gone. And, you know, people that have done that have, you know, sometimes are critical of Chambers, you know, the size of the company. But the other thing about that is Cisco, the company, gave, you know, lots of people left Cisco to start other startups and do things. And maybe there was some amount of frustration with not being able to get things done at Cisco. But the fact is they learned to manage. They learned how to do things a certain way at Cisco that allowed them to go out and do it other places. And you get that from culture. And the culture comes from the top down. And yeah, Chambers was not the first CEO in the company, but he helped really create a fantastic culture there. So even though he killed Flip, he was really a part of, I think, a big important part of the economic engine here in Silicon Valley. And we should all give him a salute for that.
Absolutely.
20 years, too.
Yeah, and you know he worked his ass off that whole time.
Mm-hmm. Bringing a company from, I think it was when he started, less than $4 billion to $45, $50 billion revenue. Big man.
Yeah, unbelievable.
And with that, we are going to wrap up episode number 34. Hear you all next week.